to bring you a story that is just unfolding.
They also think we need to eliminate all uncertainty before we take any action. It's certainly not a risk analysis they apply to other areas where they take dramatic action, you know, the Iraq war being a glaring case in point.
The United States and China obviously have differences, but look at the things we have in common. We need a stable world to allow...
That's a big question.
Now we got time.
If you don't know how to fix it, stop breaking it.
If we act boldly, we can make significant progress in reversing the potential
damage.
We
need to take some responsibility.
Cap and trade, you think that's really the answer?
Yeah, it is.
Short and sweet.
When you start cutting your energy bill, you start giving your city opportunity.
Welcome to EcoTalk and that new introduction to our program. Hope you like it. We're going to be working with it and try to freshen it up with new quotes, if not every day, then every few days, because we think the content here on EcoTalk is pretty compelling, and not the least of which is what's happening with climate change. And we have a big story on that today on this edition of EcoTalk. We will be talking about part two of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It is going to be released later this week. And Harvard oceanographer James McCarthy is here to offer the hope that in his words, we are not stupid enough to meet the worst of the forecast. And after all, that is why forecasts are made, to avoid anything too negative from happening. And if we are, though, headed down the highway to extinction, at least we'll be driving cleaner cars. A new report out by the Union of Concerned Scientists ranks the automakers. Don McKenzie will join us to tell us which ones are at the top, which ones are at the bottom. You may not be surprised by the results, but they're still interesting. In our second half, Mary Ann Hitt of Appalachian Voices is calling on all of us to form a chorus of concern about the incredibly destructive practice of mountaintop removal. Land, biosystems, and cultures are at stake, and anyone with a light bulb is in part responsible. The good news is each of us can also make a difference either way. Finally, Earth Dance. It's a smaller, greener version of the Sundance Film Festival, maybe coming soon to a theater near you. We'll tell you all about that. But first, I want to introduce our first guest, who was a lead author on the IPCC report that came out in 2001, and a key element of part two coming out this Friday. Some scientists are calling this degree-by-degree projection a highway to extinction. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we are hearing that this is going to be just as dramatic as the first one. We are speaking with James McCarthy, who is an oceanographer at Harvard, if I neglected to say that.
Yes, when the Working Group 1 report was released just 2 months ago now, it told us with increasing confidence that climate is changing. With increasing confidence that climate is changing because what we as humans are doing to the atmosphere is causing that change. It in addition, gave us a new sense of confidence that one can see this region by region around the globe. So the report that will be released this Friday, which will focus on what you could generally say the so what questions, the impacts, the adaptation that may be necessary, the vulnerability which will be revealed if adaptation cannot accommodate these future changes, will add significantly to what we were able to produce in our report just 6 years ago.
And what was the specific focus of this one? Last time we heard a lot about sea level rises and projections there.
Well, I think what we're going to see this time is confirmation with much more information of something that was strongly hinted 6 years ago in our report at that time, which was that for the first time we were seeing impacts on every continent. If you go back 10 years, climate change impacts, certainly impacts from what we could call global climate change, were largely hypothetical. That is, people were expecting that someday we would see them. By 2001, you could see evidence on every continent, but it wasn't particularly strong evidence. So what's happened since then is a lot more information has been gathered, and a lot of information that was existing in data books collected over decades was brought into new publications. And remember, the IPCC is based entirely upon published science. This is not a group of scientists who get together and write a report on what they think is happening. It's entirely based upon what's been published in the peer-reviewed scientific literature.
And it is based on consensus, which is a key point.
Well, the consensus comes in that, and it's important to remember what that means. It means that the authors, who would number several hundred on this report, and the reviewers, that would be an additional several hundred, agree that the science that's represented here is sound. Now, that ends up being a very conservative statement. In other words, a paper just published last year that may have some dramatic new findings, but has not yet stood this test of time, will not be given the same measure of confidence as a paper that was published maybe 5 years ago and has been critiqued. several other papers challenging it and finding that it could not be refuted. So it ends up being a conservative statement, and I think it's important to keep that in mind.
You say the worst is not going to happen because?
Well, because we can't be that stupid. As you look at these scenarios and realize, again, that it's no longer a question of whether this is likely to happen. We know we're on somewhere in a fan of trajectories moving upward. And where we are in that fan, whether we end up being at the top or near the bottom or somewhere in the middle, will depend to some degree on how climate unfolds, because we're really in uncharted territory. We're talking about warming the Earth the way it has not been warm any time we have recorded history. But secondly, a very large factor in where we are on this fan of curves is what we as humans decide to do. How many people, what our standard of living is, the rate at which that grows over time, but importantly, how we fuel it. If we fuel it with fossil fuels, then the products of that combustion go right into the atmosphere, unless, of course, we take measures to trap and sequester that carbon. If we move increasingly to more efficient systems that draw energy from other sources, wind, solar, geothermal, then we can bend those curves and avoid the worst scenario for impacts. And I honestly believe that the scientists with increasing confidence look at these scenarios and see the measure of impacts to natural ecosystems, to human systems, to human lives and livelihood. We will wake up, and with the sort of leadership that's really missing right now in many nations and certainly internationally, bring new resolve to this the way we have to other problems, other environmental problems over time. This is a big one. It will challenge all of our resources and all of our will, but I really believe that we can do this.
I want to give you the full quote from Andrew Weaver, a climate scientist with the University of Victoria, British Columbia. He said that the chart of the results from various temperature levels is a highway to extinction, but on this highway there are many turnoffs. This is showing you where the road is heading. The road is heading toward extinction. What are the turnoffs, and what are the key points? You just made a couple of them, but how do we go from not being stupid to being really smart quickly?
Well, one of the challenges here is that the carbon dioxide we're releasing to the atmosphere today will be around for a century. And so the trick is to begin thinking about it the way we think about investing in compound interest. That is to say, even if you do a little bit today, it will pay dividends in the future. Now, it's important to realize that all one would have to do, and of course California has already shown remarkable leadership in this area, all one would have to do is to embark upon a trajectory that begins to make our systems more efficient. And within years, within a decade, you would see a very clear signal of that. In this same period, we have to begin to look at how we're going to shift. Just imagine, more efficient by 1% per year, 1.5%, 2%. At 2%, we're gaining on the problem. 1.5%, we're staying steady with global growth. And again, California has done this. Look at the electric usage per capita in California as a result of very wise decisions made about building codes decades ago is paying dividends. If our transport systems were required to be more efficient, and we know that potential is there, we know there's enormous resistance to it, just as there was in the 1970s, and yet when those targets were put into force, they were all met. We could begin thinking about shifts, certainly with some of the innovation that's come into play in solar and wind and geothermal. And ultimately, everything has to be on the table. We need to take another look at nuclear. There are many reasons to be cautious about nuclear, but it has to be considered. And as you see these unfold over the next few decades, one can see how these exits, if you wish, could unfold. And I honestly believe that just as we thought that getting rid of the CFCs that were clearly interfering with ozone chemistry in the stratosphere in the late 80s, Just as we decided in the early 90s to get sulfur out of stack gas, all of these were thought to be very difficult, be very expensive. The economists overestimated the cost of these changes. As soon as they were made law, suddenly innovation kicked in, and the cost plummeted for all of these. And I think we're going to see successes. We're going to see how easy this is to do. And I honestly believe that the people of high school and college age today focusing on this, directing their careers towards many aspects of this, are going to be a key to having this in our mindset in every path of life, every career. Every elected official is going to have to address this. It's going to be a very important political and business focus for
thank
the
you.
Next few decades.
I wish we had more time. I could listen to you all day, but we're out of time. And thank you for telling us what the road signs to look out for will be. We've been speaking with James McCarthy. He is an oceanographer at Harvard University. When we come back, we'll see about greener cars in your future.